Let's have a word of prayer real quick, and then we're going to kind of bounce back to last week really briefly, and then move into this week, okay? Lord, help us to get this idea of forgiveness and to let it go deep into our being, deep into our soul. And as it goes deep, help it to do its work in us. And as it does that, help us to do what you've called us to do. This thing that, like the song said, is almost impossible, and that's to forgive somebody who hurt us. Help us through your words this morning, the story of other people's lives that you chose. These were big stories that affected universal truths, truths in us today. Help us to connect with that. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So I want to just review last week. Each Sunday we have an H word that relates to forgiveness. Last week the word was hurt. And we did this right at the beginning. You know, has anybody been hurt before? Like, I don't mean stub your toe hurt. I mean really hurt relationally by somebody else. And, you know, I think about everybody raised their hand. And then I asked the question, how many of you have been the one who did the hurting? Like, you're the one who caused the pain in somebody else. And again, you know, hands went up. And so this is a universal word. And we're all going to experience it. And when we experience it, God says we don't just have to stop at that point and be a prisoner of that moment for the rest of our lives. We don't have to be. And we attach some words that are kind of big umbrella words that go with how you get through hurt to forgiveness. I don't even know when to put these quotes in, so I don't have this on the screen, but I'm gonna say it to you, and then we'll get to it more in a couple weeks. Forgiveness is an event for the person who's been forgiven. It's an event, right? You guys don't know this, but Jeff stabbed me in the back a couple weeks ago. It's just really rude, and just, no, he really didn't, but we're going to go with that because Jeff's close, all right? He stabbed me in the back, and then he apologized to me. He said, Tim, I'm sorry for stabbing you in the back, so go ahead and say, Tim, I'm sorry for stabbing you in the back. Sorry. All right. So when I say, Jeff, you're forgiven, it's an event. It's an event for him. It's what he needs, and it's what I need to give him. It's an event. But for me to get to the moment of that event is a process. All right? So this is an event for Jeff, but it's been a process for me to get there. Like, I've had to go through, well, you know, that hurts, and then I had to go through this long process. And, you know, I don't want to say long because for some, maybe it isn't as long. For me, it usually is a long process. But I want to give you this just thought when it comes to forgiveness, that forgiving is an event, but forgiveness is a process. And so this month, we're really trying to probe into what that process is when you're hurt. And I gave you four words, and I know it sounds crazy. I worked with a pastor years ago, Pastor Kolaski, who he alliterated everything, okay? And it's because he never took notes into the pulpit, and he's a brilliant man who, I would go to him and I would ask him a theological question, and he'd walk up and he just had walls of books. He'd walk up to the wall and he'd go, and then he'd pull this book down and he'd open up and he'd say, read these two chapters. Or no, read these two paragraphs. And he'd grab another book and he'd say, read this chapter. Like, he was, if I ever met anybody who had a photographic memory, it was him. But one of the things that he did to remember things was, you know, he would alliterate often. So we have hurt, and then we're going to go through another H this week, next week, and the week after. But I gave you these P words that help you in the process of getting through hurt, okay? So Satch, go ahead and just pop those all up. We talked about promises, because you need a promise from God if you're going to make it through that. You need a promise from the one who's bigger than whatever our hurt is, that eventually the hurt can be healed. That you can make it through this. You can live through this. And somehow, in this promise, you can come out stronger. Then there's partner. And that's that. This is the only way I know to do it. And that's to hold God's hand and walk through the hurt. Like, walk through the truth of the hurt. find purpose in it. Again, in God is the only possibility of me finding purpose in deep hurt. And, you know, when I get up here and talk about this, it's not so much my own life and the reflection of hurts in my life, because being a pastor, I find out the hurts in so many people's lives. And early in ministry, I would just be shocked by the depth of the hurt, how deep pain could go, and how cruel someone could be to another person. And so in that helplessness, I needed to know that there could be purpose even in the depth of their pain. And what I found over the years of doing ministry is that God is so good and so great that somehow He can work together all things for good. So that was one of the things. And then peace. So the only reason I'm showing you this is not to talk about the peace from last week, but to say, if this month the Holy Spirit stirs up something in you about forgiveness, then I'm hoping you'll grab a hold of one of these at least. These are the tools that help you come to healing. God's promise, having a conversation and partnering with God to go through it, saying, God, I don't understand the purpose, but you know the purpose, and you'll reveal it to me. And then finding peace, which, remember, when God talks about peace, He's not talking about the absence of chaos. He's talking about calmness even in chaos. Okay? So that's the reason I wanted to give you. So maybe grab a hold or ask God's Spirit, which of those do you want me to grab a hold of to help me work through this process of healing? Okay? Today, I'm going to go on to the second H. And this is a word that I don't know that you'd think we'd use too much on a Sunday morning at a church. But here's the word. The word is hate. Just say that under your breath, okay? Just say the word. We see it in the news on a daily basis, right? And it's not pretty. It's actually when we see cruel. But I think if we're going to be honest about forgiveness, we have to deal directly with this word hate. Because when you're hurt in a real and deep way that marks you, like it marks your heart, it marks your soul, when you're hurt in that way, one of the most natural reactions is this word, hate. And so I think it's really important for God, who understands us and understands life in a greater way than us, for us to hear what God says. So I'm going to take, a little bit different angle this morning to get this into our hearts and souls. Okay? I want to pick up where we left off last week. Just quick reminder, we're studying a young man's life. Young man's name is Joseph. He's in a blended family. He's his father's favorite. His brothers hate him. They don't even want to be around him. And they get sent to do a job. He goes down to check on him. As he comes, his brothers come up with three hateful plans. Let's kill him. Nope. Let's throw him in this big pit and just let him die on his own. Or the third plan, which, let's sell him as a slave. Let's at least make some money and not have his blood on our hands. That's where we left off last week. So I'm going to read one verse from that chapter and then move into the next verse. Genesis 37. Verse 36, meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt. Listen to what happens to Joseph, this character that we're looking at. They sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. This is literally the most powerful nation on the planet at that time and the most powerful leader under Pharaoh. They sold Joseph as a slave to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. So let's just, even if you weren't here last week, if you never heard of the story before, is a young man, he's 17, he's his dad's favorite, he's despised by his brothers, he's thrown in a pit and sold. So here I have a question. If you were in Joseph's shoes, or even just an observer looking at that, here's my question. who should or could Joseph hate at that moment in his life? Like, who did this damage to him? Why is he now not in his dad's house where he was the favorite? Why is he now in another country at the lowest point of humanity, a slave? Why is he there? Tell me why he's there. What? He's there because of hate, right? His brothers hated him so bad that that's what he did. So what would be a really normal response? Who could Jacob hate? His brothers. Man, even the first time I remember reading this as a little kid, we were doing our family Bible study, and we're reading this, and this brother gets thrown in a pit. And so I'm a little kid with an imagination, and I'm going, what would you do if that was you? I'll tell you what I would do. If there were dirt clods in the bottom of that pit, I'd be hurling them at my brother. When my brother looked in to see if I was there, I would try and put one right in the middle of his forehead. Right? Isn't that natural? Is that normal? Who else could he have hated at that moment? Who else could he have hated? You remember he had a dream? And he told the dreams. And we know, if you've read this entire story of Joseph, we know those were God-given dreams. Right? Who else could he have hated? We hate to say this at church on Sunday morning. Who else could he have hated? Yeah. Anybody else you can think of that he could have hated in that story, Genesis 37? Why his dad, Terry? Okay. Yeah. So, the brothers already had an attitude, right? But the dad didn't help it. And then, this is why I think he could have really hated his dad. Dad, you knew that my brothers hated me and you sent me down to check up on them. Right? Could have hated. All right, well, let's pick up the story in Genesis 39. See where Joseph's at and what's going on. When Joseph was taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelite traders, he was purchased by Potiphar, an Egyptian officer. Potiphar was captain of the guard for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. The Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. This pleased Potiphar. So he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. Things are kind of looking up for Joseph, aren't they? Like, I mean, not favorite son anymore. But things are at least looking up. He's not at the bottom of the slave totem pole. Verse 4, this pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. From the day Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's household for Joseph's sake. All his household affairs ran smoothly, and his crops and his livestock flourished. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat. Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man. And Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. Come and sleep with me, she demanded. But Joseph refused. Look, he told her, my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God. She kept putting pressure on Joseph day after day, but he refused to sleep with her, and he kept out of her way as much as possible. One day, however, no one else was around when he went in to do his work. She came and grabbed him by the cloak, demanding, come on, sleep with me. Joseph tore himself away, but he left his cloak in her hand as he ran from the house. When she saw that she was holding his cloak and he had fled, she called out to her servants. Soon all the men came running in. Look, she said, my husband has brought this Hebrew slave here to make fools of us. He came into my room to rape me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream, he ran outside and got away, but he left his cloak behind with me. She kept the cloak with her until her husband came home. Then she told him her story. The Hebrew slave you brought into our house tried to come in and fool around with me, she said. But when I screamed, he ran outside, leaving his cloak with me. Potiphar was furious when he heard his wife's story about how Joseph had treated her. So he took Joseph and threw him into prison where the king's prisoners were held, and there he remained. But the Lord was with Joseph in prison and showed him his faithful love. And the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. This is kind of crazy, isn't it? Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him and caused everything he did to succeed. So, I'm going to ask you the same question. Who should or could Joseph hate at this time? Okay? We're bouncing around here. Potiphar's wife, right? Listen, you're the one that came after me. You're the one who told this lie. I was doing the right thing. You were doing the wrong thing. And everybody thinks you're okay, and they think I'm not, and I'm in prison because of it. So we got Potiphar's wife. Somebody else said Potiphar. Why Potiphar? Why could he? I'm not saying he did. Why could he have hated Potiphar at that point? Yeah. Listen, Potiphar, you live here. You know me. And you know her. Like, how in the world could you make that choice? Who else could he have hated? I know a lightning bolt is going to hit us this morning. Right? Who else could he hate even more? Joy. Hate yourself. Brothers, I heard. We're back to Genesis 37. Dad. What? Jailer. I mean, hate could be running rampant right now. So let's pick up the story. Genesis 40, verse 1. Sometime later, Pharaoh's cupbearer and chief baker offended their royal master. Pharaoh became angry with these two officials, and he put them in prison where Joseph was, in the palace of the captain of the guard. They remained in prison for quite some time, and the captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, who looked after them. Listen, he was a favorite son, favorite servant. Now he's the favorite prisoner. While they were in prison, Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker each had a dream one night, and each dream had its own meaning. When Joseph saw them the next morning, he noticed that they both looked upset. "Why do you look so worried today?" he asked. And they replied, "We both had dreams last night, but no one can tell us what they mean." I love what Joseph says here. "Interpreting dreams is God's business," Joseph replied. "Go ahead and tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream first. "In my dream," he said, "I saw a grapevine in front of me. The vine had three branches that began to bud and blossom, and soon it produced clusters of ripe grapes. I was holding Pharaoh's wine cup in my hand, so I took a cluster of grapes and squeezed the juice into the cup. Then I placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." "Well, this is what the dream means," Joseph said. "The three branches represent 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift you up and restore you to your position as his chief cupbearer. And please remember me, and do me a favor when things go well for you. Mention me to Pharaoh so he might let me out of this place." Remember, he knows he's innocent. "For I was kidnapped from my homeland, the land of the Hebrews, and I'm here in prison, but I did nothing to deserve it." When the chief baker saw Joseph had given the first dream such a positive interpretation, he said to Joseph, I had a dream too. "In my dream, there were three baskets of white pastries stacked on my head. The top basket contained all kinds of pastries for Pharaoh, but the birds came and ate them from the basket on my head." "Well, this is what the dream means," Joseph told him. "The three baskets also represent 3 days. 3 days from now, Pharaoh will lift you up and impale your body on a pole. Then birds will come and peck away at your flesh." Pharaoh's birthday came 3 days later, and he prepared a banquet for all his officials and staff. He summoned his chief cupbearer and chief baker to join the other officials. He then restored the chief cupbearer to his former position so he could again hand Pharaoh his cup. But Pharaoh impaled the chief baker, just as Joseph had predicted when he interpreted his dream. Pharaoh's cupbearer, however, forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. And then if you just spill over into the first few words of the next chapter, it says this, 2 full years later. Now, we know that Joseph was 17 when he was sold as a slave. We know when he meets his brothers, he's 37. So the best speculation is he's between 28 and 30 years old now as he comes to this time 2 full years later. So between 11 and 13 years have passed since he first got sold into slavery. So as I read this chapter now, he's gone from being this favorite brother to being in Potiphar's house, being accused, being thrown in prison. And now he's in jail. And he has this interaction between two really important officials in Egypt. He interprets their dreams. And he says, listen, make sure you tell Pharaoh that I'm innocent. If you get in front of him, which you should, you're his cupbearer, when you get there, make sure you mention me. It says the guy forgets about him, doesn't even think about him. So I'm asking that same question. Who should or could Joseph hate? He can just say, I hate all Egyptians. You think, okay, so let me distinguish between the baker. The baker's the guy who makes the pies. The cupbearer has this position that he's the official taste tester so that Pharaoh doesn't get poisoned. So he's going to hand him the cup. Before he hands him the cup, just to make sure, you know, if somebody dies, it's not Pharaoh. He's going to be, so he's very trusted. He's not just that, but he's actually an advisor. He's so close to Pharaoh that when somebody presents something, if Pharaoh asks his opinion, or in some cases, the relationship became so tight that they didn't have to wait for Pharaoh. If they had a thought, they could express it. That's an intimate relationship. You're telling me that Joseph couldn't have said, this is perfect. Now I know what God's plan is. I know what his purpose is. This guy's going to go back and tell Pharaoh, and I'm going to get freed, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to face my brothers again and see my dad, and I'm going to correct them. All of that. He could have hated that cupbearer. And then the dominoes start. Okay. The cupbearer is because I met him in prison. Now, why was he in prison? Potiphar and his wife. Oh, how did I get to Potiphar's house? My brothers. My dad. But if you push those dominoes back far enough, it gets to God. The truth is, the most natural thing for him to do at that point, the most human thing for him to do, was be filled with hate. And in many ways, you know, if he'd asked us, we'd have understood. So let me take it out of this time frame. And let's put it in a more modern time frame for us. And we get to know Joseph through Scripture, but we really don't know him. Let me bring it to somebody that I think a lot of us know, a lot of us know. I met Deb in Bible college, and she was this innocent, had only been a Christian for a few years. Little did she know that we would meet, fall in love, get married, and in just a short time, she would be a pastor's wife. I thought I knew a lot about her and a lot about her family, but I never really got into the hurtful details until after we were married. I knew there was tension from the first time that I was there. I knew there was this tension that was always under the surface, but I didn't really know how deep it went. Last year, she shared a little bit about that. And for anybody who's worried, I had a thorough talking to her this week before I would share any of this. Let me narrow it down to one night. Okay, one night in Deb's family's history. So it was Deb and her sister, who's 8 years younger than her, her mom and her dad. They went to a church service. She didn't know why, but on the way home, she knew her dad was really upset from whatever happened at that church service. And that was, you know, to some extent, a regular routine for him. That when he was at church, sometimes he'd come home and he'd be very upset. And they could feel that. They could feel that vibe in the car. And so they didn't talk on the way home. They didn't say anything. When they got home, like sisters might do, they got into a tiff. Remember I told you her sister's 8 years younger than her. And so Deb was the older one, the one that the dad figured he would talk to. And she should be more responsible. And so he called her down. And in a matter of a few minutes, unbelievable to her, and as she's describing it to me, unbelievable to me, her dad went from being angry to being violent. So this is a picture that I have. This is the picture of where it ended up. Deb was on the floor in the middle of the living room, face down, and her dad was on her back. And by her description and by her mom's description, her dad was unloading punch after punch after punch after punch. Her pastor later told me he made sure initially that she wore long sleeve shirts and wore clothes that covered because she had bruises all over her body. So I didn't find this out until a couple of years after we were married. Now you that know me, what do you think I wanted to do? So let me just say this. How many of you, like, this was my immediate thought. I'm getting in the car. I'm driving out there. I'm going to put him on the floor in the living room. I'm going to sit on his back, and I'm going to punch him. And I'm going to beat him so he feels like what Deb felt like. Right? Let's just take a vote on it. Everybody think, I'm okay. Drive out there. Sit on his back. So, I didn't get in the car. I didn't drive out there. It was a number of years later. Oh, let me just ask a question. Who could Deb have hated? Her dad. Her mom. Yeah, and only if you've been in these situations. I don't understand this. I don't understand this completely. But this was a conversation that had to be had years later and still hasn't been fully vetted out. It still hasn't been flushed out completely. But as over the years, as Deb talked to me about that moment and her memory, like her memory, one of the stark memories is as she laid on the ground, the couch was in front of her and her mom was sitting on the couch. And her mom was frozen and wouldn't move. And it's amazing to me to watch this because I'd never been in that kind of situation before. I've never experienced that. Is whenever God gives us something healthy and we twist it, we contort it, it throws everything out of balance. It throws everything. And when Deb was describing it to me, sometimes I would hear more emotion at her mom not moving than her dad who was doing the abusing. And, you know, it was a number of years later that in conversation with her mom said, I know there's something there and I'm not sure what it is. And I said, well, Mom, I mean, Deb described this evening to me and one of the things was, you know, you didn't move. And her mom goes, I knew it. Like, you know moments like that sink deep into a person's being. She said, I knew it. I knew it. Tim, you know this, right? You know if I had moved at that point, I believe he would have killed her. Like, that's how violent it was. That's horrible. And my instinct is to think of one word, hate. And unload all of that emotion on that person. So then, you know, Deb went through a process because forgiving is a process. And came to a really clear point of forgiving her dad. And again, maybe you don't know this part. part of Deb's story, but her dad actually died in a plane crash. And before that happened, she'd come to just a really, really good place of forgiveness in her heart to her dad. Part of that was understanding her dad. So I can't tell you, you know, we don't have enough time to tell you a story. Let me tell you a story about her dad. His name was James. They called him Skip. When he was 14 and 15 years old, he was gifted in two ways. He was gifted in music, and he was gifted in his passion to serve God. And so at age 14 and 15, he traveled with an evangelist. And he did the music for revival meetings. So this is a 14, 15-year-old kid who would travel with an evangelist that's sharing God's love every place he goes. And he's doing the music. He's doing what some people do at 25 or 35 or 45. He's doing it at 14 or 15. It's a really different picture than that night that he comes home and explodes in violence, right? So Skip's mom, Skip's dad, one of the godliest men I've ever met in my life. Captain in the Salvation Army. I mean, just before he passed away, he gave me his Bible. And like every page is marked. Every page is underlined. I think he wrote more than God in the margins. Every time Skip would come home from one of those revival meetings, he'd walk in excited about what God was doing and what God had done. And his mom would humiliate him. What kind of 14 or 15-year-old boy plays music? Going to church is one thing. What are you doing traveling? She would humiliate him. She would humiliate his ability to play music. And let me just tell you, untrained, self-trained, incredible musician. And she'd pour every bit of cold water she could on his relationship with God. She would completely dress him down and humiliate him every time he came in. So no wonder every time he went to church, part of him said, I love this. He played the piano at the church that Deb's family attended, but would never carry a Bible. He went to church, would come home angry. Like, can you imagine any one of the kids here today come home and their parents humiliate them about their relationship with God? Take the gift God's put in them and humiliate them about that? So when I heard that, and I met Deb's grandma, who, because I was familiar with Bible characters, when I met her the first time, I thought this is the honest thought that I had, this must be what Jezebel was like. The first time we went there, we were going to have a meal with the pastor and his wife from their church, and she talked them into the dirt for an hour before they got there. And when the doorbell rang, her whole face changed. Her whole expression changed. Oh! I mean, just, come on in. We love when you come. When they left, flipped the switch. Oh! You see the dress she had on? I thought, Deb's dad should hate her. You know what I want to do? I wanted to stand in front of her and dress her down the way she had dressed her innocent son down. I wanted her to feel a little of the humiliation that she'd heaped on him. I wanted her to have a reckoning moment, right? Like I'm going to mirror back to you what you've done to so many. Deb's reconnected one of her aunts, her dad's sister that looks most like her sister, or most like him. And in just conversation and Deb's longing to be connected with her family said, why didn't we get together more? Well, your grandma did everything she could to keep us apart. She'd tell whatever she needed to make you hate one of your brothers or sisters. I thought, that's horrible. That's horrible. And there needs to be a reckoning in her life. And that the most natural thing would be for all of her kids to hate her, and that's what she deserves. And then the years went by, and her health started to fail. And as her health started to fail, it's like I found out more pieces of the puzzle. Her mom was a prostitute. Needed to make money. Needed to take care of her families. And so at 11 and 12 years old, started prostituting her and her sister. By 13, she had one child and another one on the way. Just let me get my hands on her, Mom. Who would take an innocent little 11-year-old, 12-year-old girl and prostitute them? Who would do something like that? That's who I should hate. That's who I'm going to focus my energy on. I'm going to hate that person because what she did is wrong. Painful. So here's what God's trying to say. Be careful about hate. If you've been a Christian very long, you probably heard these words, and we'll deal with them a little bit more next week. When God says, vengeance is mine, I'll repay. You know why? He's the only one who can handle it. If it were up to me, I would have visited vengeance on Deb's dad. I'd have visited vengeance on his mom. I would have visited vengeance on her mom. So this is the lesson that I want us to get today. God tells us in His Word that there are permissible targets and there are targets that aren't permitted. And so over the years in Christianity, wise people have formed some sayings, and here's one of those sayings. Hate the sin and love the sinner. Should I hate that a man would take his daughter, put her on the ground, and beat her? Yeah. Should I hate the man? God's saying no. Should I hate that a parent would humiliate a child in a way that would damage them for decades? Yeah, I should hate that. I should hate that. Should I hate that mom? Should I hate that a parent would put their kids' life and future in complete jeopardy and sell them as if they were an item. Yeah. Should I hate that parent? God saying no. This may be one of the hardest things in God giving us this idea of forgiveness. And that He's giving us permission to hate. To hate the damage. To hate the choice. Hate the actions. But not to hate the person. The moment I choose to hate that person, I step into the place that only God can be at. And that person becomes less than a being created in the image of God. It justifies hatred going on and on and on and on. Am I supposed to like being struck on the cheek? No. I hate that pain. But God says this is so important. If you're not careful, you're going to swing back. And that's hate for a target that God says isn't okay. So He tells us, turn the other cheek and leave it in My hands. Jesus said the words and Stephen said them, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Do you know what's being said there? Deb's dad, he had no idea the damage that he was doing that day. And that his mom had no idea. And that her mom had no idea. And the only way the dominoes stop falling is through God's grace and His love in our hearts when we start a process called forgiveness and we stop hating the person. But man, we hate those actions that lead to hurt. We hate them. That's where our energy needs to go. And in that process, we can start to heal. So when I talk about a biblical story like Joseph or a story like Deb's, I know in this room there are people. You understand exactly the depth of that hurt. And I'm wondering where you're at with that. I'm wondering if you've grabbed onto some promises. You've let God walk with you. You've actually started to find some purpose in that. You've let God partner with you and talk you through that. You've let Him start to heal. If not, I just want to tell you, you don't have to stay in that dark place that keeps getting darker. You don't have to stay in that numb place where you just have to numb things so you don't have to feel. You don't have to stay busy and distracted just so you don't have to deal with it. God's saying, here's the truth. There's real hurt and there's real hate that comes with that. So what kind of gift do you think it is to our kids that Deb decided to do things different? What kind of gift? The generations just keep going in a direction until you choose, through God's love and grace, to be different. Let's bow for prayer. God, thank you for the story of Joseph. And I thank you so much for Deb's story. Help us to hate what you hate and love what you love. And you love people. You love us so much that you came, paid a price so that we could have a relationship with you forever. And in that relationship, that we could come to a place, even in our own hurt, of forgiveness. Be with anyone here this morning that's just struggling with this idea, this going the opposite of what comes so easy. Help them to walk through this with you, to hear your promise about it, to find purpose in it, to come to a place of peace. Then, Lord, I just want to pray for those who are out there today that are being abused, those that are out there today that are being humiliated, those who are out there today who are being passed around. I pray that they'll know your love and your purpose. And if that's through us, thank you. Thank you for that. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Let's all stand. This morning, I'll be up here afterwards. And if you just want to briefly say something to me, it doesn't have to be all right now, but if you're last week, this week, feeling something in your heart about forgiveness, that you're somewhere in that process, and we all voted, right? We all voted, listen, when I told you about Joseph, when I told you about Deb's dad, we all voted, hey, this is what I would do. So don't feel like you're the only one. But if there's something going on, if God's Spirit stirred up something in your heart, and you want me to be praying about it, you want to at some point meet and talk about it, do anything like that. This morning, I know usually I stay after and people come up and talk to me about a lot of different things. Their week, things that are going on, struggles, celebrations, all that. I'm just going to ask this week, okay, if there's anything that God's pulling on your heartstring about forgiveness, would you say that to me so that I can be praying? And over the next couple weeks, I think next week is one of the most misunderstood parts of forgiveness that I really want to be able to give light to, so that light can free us. Okay? And it's a weird word. It's the word hook. Doesn't seem like it fits. But I want to talk about that. And then I want to see us free. So much of what I read is talked about how relationships are broken permanently. And after those relationships are broken permanently because of unforgiveness, physical illness, emotional stress, and almost every book that I read about it leads to a darkness. That's what they call it. Some of them call it depression, but it is a darkness. And so much, I think, of depression that's going on right now, a lot of it has to do with just not understanding what forgiveness and freedom comes. So you ever heard this saying? I bought some rat poisoning because somebody hurt me. And I took it and sat there waiting for them to die. That's what lack of forgiveness is. It's a poison that's killing us. And we're just waiting for that person to feel the pain that they've put in us. It's a poison. Man, I think God wants us to free us from that poison. so we can be free. Okay? So when I pray, I'll stay up here in the front and